Low-quality fiends of a high-quality Bruins franchise, welcome back! We're going to talk about a Brady Tkachuk trade. And I really wasn't going to do this, but it does seem like many Bruins fans have taken this as devastating news. So we're going to chat about it a little bit. But before we do, I want to make a very special announcement. You guys have raised $2,247.26 towards the Charlie Davidson Children's Cancer Fund at Mass Brigham, which is incredible. That's awesome. Thank you so much for everyone who contributed, whether you've watched the videos, whether you've donated directly, whether you've been part of the high quality inspectors for like the YouTube membership side of things. Thank you, everyone who contributed. I am going to put up $500 of my own dollars, bringing our total to $2,747.26. I think it would be extremely rude for me not to participate truly with my own funds. I'm very proud of that. I think you guys did an incredible job. I'm pumped. I'm just awesome. Just awesome. F cancer, particularly children's cancer. It's just good work. Good work by all of you, and I appreciate it. Also, not a small announcement here. Patrice Bergeron, whose number will be retired this upcoming season, is a first ballot Hall of Famer. Duh. I'm not going to dive all into Patrice Bergeron's career. We did a bit of that on the Short Shift podcast. You guys know who Patrice Bergeron is. Maybe we'll do something special for that directly. But for now, that's just awesome. Shame that he has to share that ballot with Keith Tkachuk, but what are you going to do? Let's talk about the Tkachuks, though, shall we? Brady Tkachuk is traded to the Florida Panthers, and you might be sitting here going, why am I listening to a Bruins fan talk about this trade? What do they care? Well, I'm glad you asked, because I didn't. I'm genuine with that. Fine, sure. Did the Panthers get better? Absolutely. Will this affect the Bruins? Sure. It didn't feel like the kick in the balls that many are making it out to be. Now, I do understand some logic here. So we're going to go through a couple of things. Let's first go over how this happened, right? So Brady spends the better part of a year saying he's not going to force his way out of Ottawa just to play with his brother. And then he did that because that's who these people are. Just a reminder, that's what the Tkachuks are. That's who they are. And you can argue with that, but the proof is in the pudding. He would only approve a trade to the Panthers, the Carolina Hurricanes, the Vegas Golden Knights, or perhaps the Minnesota Wild. Those were the reports, right? That does not mean that was a firm four teams. It does not mean that there weren't a couple more. It does not mean that he even would have approved it to anywhere but Florida, right? He had the no movement option that was given to him by his GM. There's a lot of details about this that we'll get huffy about. But the truth is, we don't know exactly what happened behind closed doors when it came to the decision of trading him. Now, the Panthers get Brady Tkachuk, a 26-year-old left winger with a cap hit of $8.2 million a year for two more years. He is a ferocious forechecker. He's a goal scorer. He's a point getter. He is a true top-line hockey player. The Senators, who thought they were coming out of this rebuild, and I'll make an argument for why they might still be coming out of this rebuild, they get number 9 in this year's draft. They get number 25 in this year's draft. So that's two first-rounders, one of them being a top 10 pick in a draft that has a considerable amount of talent up at the top. They get a 2029 first-rounder and a 2027 second-rounder. Why a 2029 first-rounder? Because they do not own their 2028 first-rounder, which belongs to the Boston Bruins, they being the Panthers. We have that pick. So, real quickly, who wins? Well, I have a pretty simple approach to these kind of things. If you're giving up the best player in the deal, and he's a known commodity, you know how good he is, and you are getting back, you know, whatever. If you're giving up the best player, you're typically losing the trade, right? And we've seen times where that's not true, but that's almost always true, right? The biggest individual impact of the trade, that's the winner. So I think, of course, the Panthers win. Now, the Senators do get a strong grouping of draft capital for the man-child that was their captain. It feels like solid value, at least, and especially when you compare draft picks to players, right? It's exactly what would have been required to move a player like Brady. It doesn't really matter to the Panthers. Yeah, it's a huge price. but it's pretty easy to say they win at first glance because the cup window is now. F them picks. Let's get these dubs. The Panthers now have about $7 million in cap space remaining with one of the most complete top nine forward groups in the NHL. They have a locked down back end as well with some really solid players. Their big problem is in net, but it would appear there's some traction on them spending whatever they have left on Hellebuck. They're running out of assets. But what's working in their favor, and has been shouted from the heavens by so many at this point, that, yeah, the tax, the no tax on income stuff, that's a huge advantage for them. The weather, huge advantage for them. It's a destination that people want to go. They'll always be in the mix with free agents that they want or guys trying to force their way there. They're very competitive. They're very good. As long as that lasts, it's going to be easier to get that talent. I understand how this trade does signify, to a certain degree, a changing of the guard in the NHL. We've talked about it for years that player empowerment is upon us. It's been upon us, but this was the next step. Just like the NBA, players deciding, I don't like it here, I'm leaving. The players are the game. The players are the important part of what this league is. They're going to have that power. So a couple of things that I've been seeing come across the old ticker with this trade. We'll start with this one because I'm very sick of hearing it, and I'm hearing it in every trade that's even close to this. The no movement clauses are bad, and players can force their way out whenever, wherever. It doesn't matter. They can push, and they cannot honor their contracts, and it's a bad practice, and players shouldn't do this. They should honor their contracts. Two things, real quick. Blame the GMs, not the players. GMs have used the no movement clause to get closer to team-friendly contracts for major contributors for a while now. And it took a minute for the players to catch on, but they're finally figuring it out and utilizing these contracts to their fullest extent to benefit themselves, which it's their job. Yeah, they should do it. The other side of this, now you've heard that from a ton of people, right? I'm not the first to say that. The other side of this is no one has to do anything, right? Now look, you got a player who's in their last year, fine, right? That's, you are kind of forced to do something. If you want some sort of asset at the trade deadline, you've got to move them. Now, typically, you'll be able to get a couple teams bidding at a certain point, but you aren't forced to do really anything outside of that, hey, we might lose him for nothing if we don't keep him for the, or if we do keep him for the next half season, whatever it may be. On the other end of that, though, Tkachuk had 2 more years. Larkin has like 6, whatever that is. And you look around the league and there's Matthews and there's McDavid and these guys who, there's still time left on the contracts. A GM is perfectly capable of just saying, no, I'm not moving you yet. And what is the next move? Like, people want to act like the players will just go, well, fine, I'll just sit out. Okay, you lose out from that money, right? The no movement clauses are great, but we're not paying for you for a year you didn't show up to work. Does it hurt the team? Absolutely. Does it waste a year of your career? Yeah, it does. I'm waiting for a GM to do that, and we might see it with this Larkin situation. We might. Now, the reports are that them in Dallas are really getting things going right now. But if I'm a GM, I'm very comfortable. If there's multiple years left on the deal, being like, okay, I'll see you at camp. And if you don't show up, ain't no one sending you any paychecks. Don't expect anything in the mail. I just feel like people have this idea that once a player goes, I want to trade, the GM has to do it. They don't have to do shit. They can take their sweet time. And whether I get the value I want from you now or 4 months from now when teams are more desperate towards the trade deadline and you've been rested, you're just sitting there? Sure. I just think it were too quick to be like, oh, the players are really taking control. They should use everything that's in their contracts. But also, GMs aren't idiots, most of them being lawyers. They have leverage, even if it feels like they don't. Another thing, why didn't Sweeney do this? Let's ignore the fact that we weren't on the trade destination lists. And I know that that topic is a whole different thing, right? It is, Well, is Boston ever going to be able to go back to being truly a strong franchise when we're not a destination, right? It's cold. There's hella taxes in Massachusetts. Those are basically the two things, right? We're historic and the city's beautiful and things are changing. And players want to be in nice weather and they want to have as much money as possible, which who can blame them? So I understand the concern there. But we're going to walk away from that for a moment and just, what if Boston was on this list? You just have to decide. A, do you really want Brady Tkachuk jumping into the team? I think he's a good player. I think he makes the Bruins better. I don't really want anything to do with the Tkachuk family. They give me, like, secondhand embarrassment quite frequently, and I have very little respect for any of them. But the lack of a top 10 pick for the Bruins makes this really difficult. Unless you sit there and go, I would give up Hagans or I would give up Dean Letourneau for Brady. Which I don't think you're insane if you want to do that. But would you give up Hagans, Bruins first this year, and then another first rounder for Brady Tkachuk? Because honestly, I don't think I would. I'd rather have the potential center, first-line center, that we so desperately need as a franchise. I don't think Sweeney's in on this to this level because the price doesn't really make sense for us to do. Whereas for Florida, it's so easy for them to say F them picks because they know they can get back to the finals this year, especially with a little more help offensively. I have also seen Sweeney screwed all this up. Now the Florida Panthers pick in 2028 is useless. This is a weird one to me, guys. This is a weird one. Because the expectation was always that the 2028 pick was at the back half of the draft outside of a more injury-riddled seasons or whatever. This was supposed to be a late-round pick that we were getting out of this. That was never for debate there. And then, of course, your response there is, well, then the Marchand trade sucked. That's rewriting history. And I know a lot of people said at the moment that it sucked. But Marchand and Sweeney couldn't reach a contract extension that both sides would accept. Marchand had been an excellent Bruin for a very long time. So they worked to get him to a location that he wanted to go, which was Florida. And Florida being the only team at the table, we still get a conditional first-round pick, which does turn into a first-rounder for us out of that trade. Is it like a stellar, amazing trade? No, but situationally, it's about as good as you're going to get. You know? And then, of course, you see Marchand's extension, and you go, oh, yeah, we weren't even close. Because we weren't going to pay him till he was 42, 43 years old. That was never in Sweeney's lexicon there. It was not going to happen. While I understand the frustration about the 2028 pick, it was just always going to have the potential to be not a very high pick. So I feel like that just going backwards where we're getting upset because we want to get upset about it. How do the Bruins respond? I'd like to tell you that there's a world where this actually blows up in the Panthers' face. Committing all your assets to building out a star-studded roster can go sideways really quickly with just one domino falling. But all of their guys are being paid $10 million or less, which at this current time is pretty good, especially with the amount of star power you have. The cap is going to keep going on this upward trajectory outside of another pandemic, and it means the only thing that they're really running out of is assets, not room to actually fit the players that they managed to claw away from other teams under the cap. They should be fine. But that doesn't mean that the Panthers are now unbeatable. Yes, they should be one of the top four best offenses next year and very much a favorite to win the cup outside of one or two other teams, and even then, maybe they are the true runaway favorite. Hockey has a way of closing windows that felt like barn doors just a few months ago. The Bruins respond by focusing on what they can control. What that means is, yes, they're going to be very involved in this current trade market for the other big names that are interested in getting out. They'll be quick to give away the first rounders from the Leafs and the Panthers and their own, but it does have to be for something that makes sense to spend assets on. Now, it does look like the league is catching on to, same thing with the NBA, F them picks. the picks, if you're getting a guy that you're hoping that pick turns into, that's a great trade, right? So rarely are you trading multiple firsts that both are going to work out to be really good players for you. Oftentimes, you're trading these first-round picks. There's still a dart throw. It's no certainty. I think the Bruins understand that, and they will be part of giving up these first-rounders and quick to do so if the right deal is in front of them. What I think is more important is they need, if they truly want to get back to a Stanley Cup contender style, they need to figure out what their identity is. I know we've talked about it all year. We talked about it last year, too. We talked about the new identity, the next wave of Bruins greatness, whatever that looks like. It looks like right now you have two options to build this team out. Now, of course, Swayman is your pillar here on the back end. But is this going to be a defense-first counterpunch team where you expect to just control the pace of play? Because while you might be in your zone longer than you want to, defensively, you're very, very stout, and you'll have an easier time clearing pucks out and forcing the puck up ice, and then it's about counterpunching and opportunistic scoring? Or are they going to go more of a skilled, fast, aggressive style that leads to heavy workloads for Swayman and for our defensemen, but more consistent scoring chances for the team on the other end? Whatever it ends up actually being, they do need to have a true identity. And I still feel like the Bruins haven't found theirs yet. Yes, you want to build from the net out. We get that. Yes, you want a stout defensive core. We get that. You need more skill and talent up front, says Sweeney. You need more speed. You need more forechecking. You need everything. I get it. But until they totally define how they want to play, you won't be capable of competing with these teams anyway. I think the Bruins need to be focused on what it is they can do to create a team that has one singular goal and is moving in the same direction. It's easy to look around the league and the trades and things like that and just go, we're screwed. We're just screwed. The Bruins aren't close to Colorado. They're not close to Dallas. They're not close to Florida. They're not close to Vegas. They're not close to Carolina. They're not close. If that's where your mindset is, then this trade shouldn't bother you anyway, because you are already like, well, we're not even there yet. The Bruins have a lot of work to do. I have a hard time, having watched hockey for as long as I have, seeing a deal like this and just going, oh, the league's screwed. Because how many times have we looked back and been like, that team should be an absolute juggernaut for years to come, and it just doesn't work out. Now, obviously, Florida knows how to win. They have to fix whatever's going on in net. But other than that, they're in a good position to win, and they know how to do it. It's going to be a frustrating team to play against, that's for sure. But the arms race in the Atlantic is in full swing. Based on current rosters, I'd probably put the Bruins fifth in the Atlantic, and maybe that's being generous. It's not where you want to be, not fully out of the picture. In one way, this could result in Ottawa being one of the few teams that would be considered fodder in the Atlantic, which would be a welcome adjustment because it seems like everyone's going for it this year. Now, their front office has been very clear in being like, this is not a step back for us. We are looking to contend. We are looking to use these assets to make our team better. They want to be in the picture next year. On that point, there is a case where this actually makes the locker room so much better in Ottawa. And the loss of Brady on the ice, although his impact being great, we've seen it before where teams are like, we're better now. We work together better. We know what we're trying to do. We're all on the same page. We like each other, which goes way further than people think, actually liking the people you're in the room with. There's a real possibility that Ottawa goes, this made our team better, and we have more assets. Now, it's probably not true, but there are a lot of directions this can actually go. The Bruins have a lot of work to do, and this does make a cup-contending window seem even less likely. I'll give you that, with these kind of deals for the best teams. It's just, we've been watching too long to assume anything about what this will actually result as. The approach I'm taking with this is, yes, Florida got stronger. Until the Bruins have a true identity, I'm just not going to overthink what other teams are doing. This wasn't a move that was available to us because Brady didn't want to come here. I didn't really want Brady all that much either, which obviously makes me a little biased and allows me to have an easier time waving this away. So I understand those of you who really wanted Brady are very upset here. But I can't get upset about moves that we could never have been a part of. It's just a waste of energy to me. And again, that 2028 pick was supposed to be bad anyway. It was supposed to be. We'll see. This makes that team better. And obviously makes it much deeper in the playoffs, but the team was already, if healthy, going to be a playoff contender and could have gone on a run. So I guess I'm just pretty calm about it. I know that this is a little rambly. We're just kind of going over some stuff with it, but it just doesn't bother me that much. I will say, and this sounds like sour grapes, but I'm not sour about this at all. Brady's legacy, I mean, dude, that's not really what I would want to be known for, is running away to your brother to hopefully have an easier chance at a cup. I know it's a dying breed. I know it's win above everything else. But when I think about win above everything else, it's I want to win. I want to win, right? I want to take this franchise that I'm a part of and bring them to another level. I want to do that. I want to be a part of that. And now it feels like he's, you know, going to go be a part of that in a place that it's going to be a far easier job to do. It is going to be way less on his shoulders. He's going to get way less credit for it. And you're always just going to sit there and go, yeah, okay, dude. We're all impressed that you ran to your brother to try to have an easier route here. I get it. Like, oh, it would be sick to play with my brother. I actually wouldn't feel like that if I was in the league and my brother was in the league. I would want to be like, I'm going to crush you. You've got your two cups. Good. Watch this. Right? I would not want to be like, you already got two cups over there. Let me just, you know, let me come over. That's like late stage career stuff, right? Hey, we're both in our mid-30s. Let's join up on a team and see if we can have one last crack at this. I don't know. It just seems like a real loser move. And I have a lot of respect for guys who stick it out on one team. And Marsham was one of those guys too, but it didn't work out that way. It also takes very special circumstances for it to work out that way. So I don't really want to blame Marsham for not spending his entire career as a Bruin, because, I mean, technically he could have if Sweeney wanted to sign the contract that he had in mind. And obviously, I'm not saying Marchand ran away for an easier chance. Marchand was like, hey, this team is trading guys for assets. It's a new era, and I still want to play competitive hockey. It's different when you're in your mid-30s rather than 26 years old. Anyway, that's my rambling. Thank you, everybody, for supporting the channel and hanging out with me. And as always, go Bees. Go Bees!